Welcome to the Math Ed Podcast. My name is Sam Otten from the University of Missouri in Columbia, and my guest today is Krista Jackson, who's a professor in the School of Education at St. Louis University over on the other side of the state. So Krista, thanks so much for being here to talk with me.
Thank you so much.
We're going to be talking about an article that Krista wrote with the team, and it's published in the International Journal of STEM Education. And the article is Equity-Oriented Conceptual Framework for K-12 STEM Literacy. So this is a framework article that kind of basically presents a way of thinking about STEM literacy and infuses some good ideas that we're going to get into. But Krista, you have a whole team of co-authors with you on this paper. So I wonder, first of all, just how did this team come together and what motivated you to get together and write this article on STEM literacy?
Yes, on this article, we have a whole collection of authors, including Margaret Moore Schroeder, Sarah Bush, Kat Morocco, Thomas Roberts, Caitlin Yost, and Abigail Fowler. So the team actually got together because I began my time at the University of Kentucky. And while I was at the University of Kentucky, myself and Margaret, we started collaborating together and we started doing STEM camps and in having informal learning environments. And then we developed that through her husband and really dive deeper into what it means to do informal learning environments, particularly in relationship to STEM and broadening the participation of underrepresented students in STEM. And so we began to collaborate more and more. And then as we collaborated, our team grew and other people started reaching out as we were doing various presentations. And then, of course, I transferred universities. But then I also stayed in contact with Margaret and continue to do the STEM camps going back and forth to the University of Kentucky, even at my new university, but then also starting the informal STEM camps at my new universities. And then Thomas Roberts at that time was our graduate assistant. And so he had a chance to join the team. And then now he is a newly associate professor at Bowling Green. And we're continuing to collaborate with one another within this domain as well. And Caitlin and Abigail were REU students at the University of Kentucky. So they had an opportunity to really dive into the informal learning environments that we were doing around STEM. So we have been collaborating with one another for over 13 years now. So it's been a good working relationship with the group.
Yeah. And REU's the research experience for undergraduates. Is that right? Yeah. So you had undergraduate students involved, graduate students involved, faculty involved, and now you've gone to different places, but you're still keeping those connections. And so everybody seems to have a passion for STEM literacy and for increasing opportunities for students to get involved in STEM, and especially students from marginalized groups. Is that right?
That is correct. So our goal is to really provide opportunities and access to historically excluded populations in STEM.
All right. So for this article where you lay out an equity-oriented conceptual framework for STEM literacy, you also, it looks like you really dug through the literature and you looked at a lot of past work on STEM literacy, and especially you looked at other ways that people have framed or tried to conceptualize STEM literacy. I'm just curious, what ideas came out to you and to the group when you were looking at the past literature on STEM literacy? And then what was it that you felt like you wanted to add or that you wanted your perspective to be added to this framework?
So in our review of the literature, we found several different frameworks on STEM and then a couple of frameworks just on STEM literacy, but none of the frameworks really focused intentionally on equity. And that was one area that we wanted to make sure is explicitly defined within the framework, even though equity may have been in the back of the researchers and the author's mind as they were developing their framework, but they never gave specific attention to equity. So when we developed the conceptual framework for the STEM literacy, we wanted to make sure equity was at the forefront. We didn't want to treat it as, yes, it's an understood process, or yes, we need to make sure we're involved in equitable practices and have that as something that is in the background. We wanted to make sure that it's in the foreground as we're looking at STEM literacy.
And do you feel like if there's a STEM literacy framework and then separately there are some guiding principles or some guiding ideas about equity, but they're kind of like in two different dimensions or two different separate frameworks? Do you feel like that's not as potent, or that it doesn't bring as much power to it as if you put them together into a STEM literacy framework that itself has equity in it?
I do, because many times when we have those two disparate separations, people only pay attention or close attention to one and disregard the other, or weigh more on one than the other. Whereas when we're actually integrated within the framework, it's all in a cohesive package where individuals, whether they're researchers, educators, policymakers, et cetera, they can see how that is exactly infused within the framework itself and how it actually plays out, instead of looking at two separate guidelines and documents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that infusion was really the benefit that I saw when I was reading the article, because if I came at it with two separate frameworks, a STEM literacy framework and then some equity, you know, an equity framework or something, there's still a lot of translation work that's needed. Mm-hmm. Like it's not obvious exactly how the equity stuff will show up in a STEM camp or in a, you know, middle school science class versus a math class, or when you're trying to do the integration. So what I appreciated about your team putting them together is you did some of that translation work of what does the equity issue look like in the context of trying to empower a STEM identity, or trying to do some mathematical reasoning that ties in with, you know, engineering or whatever. So those connections and translations are non-trivial. So that's why I appreciated your insight and your team being able to do some of that work.
Thank you.
So let's go ahead and take a look at this framework. So it's the equity-oriented STEM literacy framework, and it has two what I would call these broad aspects that kind of undergird the entire framework. First of all, you have this idea overarching it that there's opportunity and access to high-quality integrated STEM learning experiences. So this idea that students need various opportunities and they all need access to high quality STEM literacy. Mm-hmm. So that undergirds sort of the whole framework. And then you have it represented where it sort of like lies beneath everything. It sort of colors everything underneath the framework. And that's systems of oppression and privilege. I wonder if you can just comment on both of those and how you see those, or how those came, you know, to be in the framework.
So the opportunity and access, which is the foundational of the framework, where we have to provide students opportunity and access to high quality STEM learning experiences, is really rooted in Gutierrez's notions of equity. When we're looking at the two axes, where we have access, achievement, identity, and power, but really taking the access portion of that equity and really garnering it in to provide students that access, because without providing that access to those high quality STEM learning experiences, students don't have the opportunity to really develop their STEM literacy. So we must initially provide those, give students that opportunity and access, so they can actually go through the process of that STEM literacy development. And so therefore, that's why the opportunity and access is the overarching to begin the framework, to open the door, because mm-hmm. without providing that opportunity, the doors are actually closed. So they don't even have the opportunity to even begin to develop their STEM literacy. So beginning with those high quality STEM learning experiences, and we focus more on high quality STEM learning experiences and not just run of the mill, just what we call everyday STEM learning experiences, but they have to be high quality, where students are engaged in authentic hands-on experiences and they actually have the opportunity to really apply some of their learning, which gets into the other aspects later on of the STEM literacy framework, but they have to have those high quality experiences. And then the other part of the framework that you had mentioned, which is the disruption of the oppression and privilege, where we really want to, when we're providing our students these high quality STEM learning experiences, we want to disrupt oppression and privilege. And to disrupt oppression and privilege is really whether they're K-12 students or adults or adolescence, or however we want to look at that, those opportunities to empower them to really become, I'm getting to other parts of the framework, sorry mm-hmm. about that, but to really become the change agents to disrupt those systems of oppression and privilege when they encounter every day, such as racism, classism, ableism, et cetera, et cetera.
For the oppression and privilege, are you specifically thinking about STEM, like science and mathematics in K-12 settings where they, you know, that has oppression privilege? Or do you mean the general educational system having oppression privilege? Or do you mean both and?
Both and. So, So we're not treating those as two disparate sections because they're all intertwined together. So we can't separate the two. And then also when we're looking at STEM, really disrupting the oppression and privilege that's also in the STEM workforce, and really who is considered doing STEM and these different STEM careers that we have out there, who is making up the majority of those particular workforce entities, and why isn't more of the population of historically excluded groups in those positions? So really disrupting that in that arena, but then also within the educational system as well.
Okay. The framework also has these six kind of interlocking components of STEM literacy. So I wonder if you could just comment on each of these a little bit. In the article, you first mentioned one that probably people are familiar with, which is critical thinking or problem solving as a, you know, cornerstone of STEM literacy. But do you have any comments on that one?
Yes. So with the critical thinking and problem solving, that is really infused in what we do. So we want to focus on those critical thinking skills where we are having students think for themselves to solve these complex problems and to really engage in that problem solving process so that they can see the utility and the applicability of the STEM disciplines and the STEM that they are learning. It's just, we'll get away from the age old question of, when am I ever going to use this, or why do I have to learn this? But they're actually applying and using it through those critical thinking and problem solving skills.
Yeah. And that's what I liked in your framework, how each one kind of led to the other. So it really was a connected chain of these literacy components, because the critical thinking and problem solving, when you start engaging in that, you start doing the problem solving, it leads to a sense of utility and applicability where the students say, oh, I'm having a chance to do this STEM stuff, but also I can see why it's useful. I can see, you know, how it would be good for society or good for, you know, humanity to have these skills. It also, by the way, reminded me of an article that I reviewed in a previous episode, a Young and Cunningham article, where they were looking at Black girls in STEM, and they were talking about how some of the Black girls are like, yep, I can do this science and math stuff all day, but it doesn't mean I find it very valuable or useful. And so they were pointing out, to really have equity, we have to help the students, or we have to support the students to have experiences so that they not only see how they're capable of it, but they also see that it's worthwhile and, you know, applicable. So your framework also captures both of those elements.
Exactly. And then that also ties into another aspect of the framework, which is empathy. So we normally don't think of empathy as being part of STEM literacy, but we purposefully included empathy as part of it because that's where students begin to feel along with and why they're doing these problem solving and these critical thinking skills, whether they're creating a prosthetic leg or doing a robotic arm to help someone, or they're making a coat or some type of outerwear to prepare or to cover someone else. So they're beginning to empathize with and see the reason why we need to do this. So they're empathizing and making those STEM learning experiences more meaningful to the students as well.
Yeah, which I agree with you that that's interconnected with seeing the utility of it. If you can actually feel how it helps people or how it can make a difference, that also can help you feel like it's worthwhile to do it. That also leads into, again, these are all interconnected, but that leads into this idea of dispositions and also the STEM identity. You want to comment on those?
Exactly. So with the STEM dispositions, it really is focusing on the students or the individual's attitude toward or their interest in STEM, and which ties into that empathy piece as well as that utility and applicability, as we had mentioned before, so that as the students are engaging in these high quality STEM learning experiences, STEM dispositions are productively widening and increasing along with their STEM identity development. And we talk about identity a lot, but really looking at that STEM identity develop where they can begin to see themselves as STEM literate individuals, regardless if they choose to go into a STEM related career or not. So we're not using the STEM literacy framework to only predispose individuals to go into STEM careers, but we're wanting to create a STEM literate society because that is the direction that our society in the 21st century that we're heading towards, so that they can be productive as well as more efficient, so to speak, within the society that they're living in.
Mm-hmm. Again, that also just helps me connect to the Young and Cunningham work, because they also talked about identity development as an important outcome that we want. We want students, and we want, in that case, it was Black girls, to see that they have a positive STEM identity. But it doesn't mean that they have to become a science major, and it doesn't mean they have to become a scientist. It's like, no, that's still their personal choice about what they want to do with their life. But hopefully we can just help it be a positive part of their identity that they, you know, that they see it. So yeah, it's cool to see that you're kind of on the same page with some of the other things that have been on the podcast here in the past. Exactly. It's all also leading to empowerment, which again kind of brings on the affective side of things and really being attuned to the students' experiences in it. What's your kind of take on empowerment in this framework?
Exactly. So with empowerment, we're really empowering the students to use STEM to engage in that problem-solving process. So as they're developing their solution, they are the ones who are doing it. So they're the ones solving the problems, and they're the ones that are engaging in that inquiry-based learning approach and doing the things that will make society more enjoyable. They're also being empowered where they're developing that sense of community, or that also that sense of belonging, because a lot of times, particularly with historically excluded populations, they don't have necessarily, not all, but some don't have that sense of belonging. And then when they begin to see others who look like them that are engaged in the same work and that are doing the similar things, they begin to become more and more empowered, where they're seeing, yes, I can do this too, or I can make this difference as well. Or sometimes they can be the lone one, and that's fine too, but it also builds up that sense of belonging as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that all builds to where this is all pointed in the framework, is the societal change agents that you alluded to before. With your framework here, it's not just about equity for young people to have STEM literacy experiences. It seems like you actually say an equitable STEM literacy kind of program should actually affect society. Is that right?
Exactly. Because to become STEM literate equitably, so to speak, we're empowering students, individuals at large, to become change agents so that they will have the tools that they need in order to embark change, because they will have the agency in order to do so.
So taking it out into the world, I'm curious about how you hope that this equity-oriented STEM literacy framework will get taken up in math ed, or maybe, you know, how have you already seen this framework, you know, put into action, maybe in your STEM camps or elsewhere?
So seeing this framework being utilized a lot within the camps, as well as other even formal learning environments where teachers are incorporating more integrated STEM practices, because that's the line that they're going on, and doing that in a way that is being infused where they're seeing the change and seeing how their students are becoming more and more motivated, engaged, and they are looking at other mechanisms and tools and not trying to just focus on one entity, but they're seeing the realization on why they're learning different things. And a lot of, even with students, they have stated that it is through this practice they realize why they're learning the things that they're learning in school. So they're beginning to see the utility and the applicability even of the siloed STEM disciplines that we're teaching in school. Through this framework and through these experiences, they're able to apply. It's like, okay, now this makes sense. But then also another use of this framework that we're hoping that will be used is to continue to be used in research and continue to ways to strengthen it and other ways to see how it's applied in other settings. In addition to both the summer STEM learning experiences, as well as other informal learning experiences, as well as the formal learning experiences. How is it applied in an elementary mathematics classroom? How is it applied? How does that differ from when we're applying it in a geometry class at the high school level? What is the transformation there, or what is the difference, or what is the add-on to it that is being done? Then also even in taking it to science too, having it applied to different science classes as well, looking at how these mechanisms within the STEM equity oriented STEM literacy framework is really playing out within the students and how we are really increasing and developing their STEM literacy.
Yeah, and I appreciated how the framework is set up where you can look at integrations of science and math or math and engineering or technology, but also it's very much laid out where any of those separate disciplines can actually still use this framework for infusing equity in. So like you said, it could actually just be from a math perspective. You can think about how am I getting the empowerment? How am I getting the empathy? And how does that fit in with the literacy that we're trying to develop or science on its own? So I like it that it's kind of, it's useful for the individual subjects, but it's also useful if you're trying to do something bigger across the subjects of science, technology, engineering, math. And actually, you even included STEAM with the arts in there as well. You're not being exclusive. So I thought that was good.
Right.
Well, I've been speaking with Krista Jackson about her article in the International Journal of STEM Education. I have a couple other questions I want to ask while I have you here as well.
Okay.
So I want you to look back to your graduate school, your doctoral experience. So I happen to know that
a long time ago.
Not that long ago. But I happen to know you went to Mizzou here at the University of Missouri. But I wonder if you just comment on your PhD studies and maybe if you give us like the short version of what your dissertation was back not so long ago.
Yes. So my dissertation focused on teachers' knowledge of equity, particularly when they're teaching Black students in the mathematics classroom. So I really focused on the elementary classrooms and the teachers' knowledge and how they use that, drawing a lot on Latson Billen's work that she has done with the Dream Keepers and the African-American students, and then infusing that with my own, developing my own conceptual framework on what that means to teach from an equity standpoint, on what that teacher's knowledge of equity actually looks like.
Mm-hmm. And how was your time at Mizzou back then? I think it was just before I got here, but.
It was great. Catherine Chabal was my advisor, my major professor, and she was, of course, remarkable. And it was great. I had a great experience. I had the opportunity to get involved in a lot of different things and meet a lot of network with a lot of individuals as well.
Yeah, and the curriculum center was still probably going at that time, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm a CSMC fellow.
All right. my last question is, though, if you were not in math education, is there something else you could imagine doing with your life?
You know, believe it or not, I've always wanted to be a teacher. I was at the point where when I was younger, I would take my younger sister, Kathy, I give her own shout out, and I would make her sit down at the table and call me Miss Maven, which was my maiden name, and I would have her do math problems. I would teach her math and do things like that. But if I didn't do that, one other thing that I love to do is to play games. And I think I would be a game creator and create different games. I know that's also tied with mathematics because of that logical thinking and reasoning, but I enjoy games. And I also, okay, you said one thing. I'm going to give you one other thing. I also enjoy writing short stories and skits. So
Well, that could go together with the game creation, right? You have to have a good story to go with it.
Exactly. So I think those would be some of the areas that I would go into if I was not in mathematics education.
Yeah. Well, you know, I feel like you could still create a really cool game on the side, even as a professor, you know, and it seems like now there's more opportunities to create games and get them out there than ever before, mm-hmm. probably. So, no, that's cool. Yeah. I just had a family vacation with brothers and stuff and, you know, in-laws, and we enjoy playing games. So I always play the most games when I'm like back with my family in Michigan, and they usually bring out a new one that I've never heard of before. We try it out, right. But it's fun, you know, and then we have a few, you know, classics that we always enjoy. So mm-hmm. no, that's fun.
Exactly. Yes.
Well, Krista, it's great talking to you. And thanks so much for the work that you're doing and for spending this time with us.
Thank you so much.